I was asked to give a bit of a broad overview about adolescent healthcare utilization patterns and thinking about how that might help us consider a national strategy for adolescent vaccinations, with schools in particular. So I thought, I did something similar to this last year, but I thought that since everybody has had lunch and everybody is sleepy, I'm going to start off with a quiz to wake you all up. And so here is my quiz. What do these two people know about adolescent healthcare utilization? So David Letterman was asking me when I was last on the David Letterman show. Not really. So what these two people know is the top 10 list about adolescent healthcare utilization patterns and implications for vaccination delivery. So I'm going to give you the top 10 list here. So first, before we start, as with anything, I think we should define what an adolescent is, because many people actually have different definitions. And it partly depends on your perspective. So I think this may be the perspective of a parent with the adolescent causing one to scream. Since we're talking about schools, this may be the school's perspective with the adolescent trying to learn but maybe falling asleep. But from the public health perspective for adolescent vaccinations, for my talk at least, I'm going to consider adolescents 11 to 21 years of age. So there's 40 million adolescents across the United States, 14% of the U.S. population. It's a large group to vaccinate year after year. So lesson number 10. Most adolescents do have a usual source of care. And this slide shows the percent of adolescents with a usual source of care. And I think the most important part of this slide is the red one, which is that only a couple of percent of adolescents say that they don't have any place to go for a usual source of care. And we'll talk about that more in a second. Another important point is, unfortunately, something like 7 or 8% say that the emergency department, the ED, is their usual source of care, so that really isn't certainly a medical home. But the good part of this circle is that all of the rest are classic medical homes, hospital-based clinics, and physician offices. So most adolescents do have some place to go. And here's another way to look at it. This shows the percent of children with a usual source of health care across the United States. All the way up here, I just go up to age 18. The red is none. And the lesson here is that younger adolescents, almost everybody has a pediatric or family physician medical home. The older the adolescents get, the higher the red, the greater the percentage who don't have a usual source of care. And just very briefly, it's hard to separate medical home and usual source of care from health insurance. Despite some great gains in health insurance, even in 2005, on your right-hand side, 11% of adolescents are still uninsured. It's still a national tragedy, and it's hard to have a usual source of care if you don't have health insurance. So that was lesson number 10. Lesson number 9, just because you have it doesn't mean you use it. Now here I'm actually not talking about sex, I'm talking about medical homes. So many adolescents do not go to their medical homes or any other place for care. So that's sort of, they may have a usual source of care, but they may not go there for any care. And this is a national study, so this is U.S., everything I'm going to show is U.S.-wide. So this is a national study that shows the receipt of ambulatory care and primary care within 1 year. And if you look at the top of the bars by age, you can see that somewhere between 60 to maybe 70% of adolescents have one visit to some ambulatory health care site, just any kind of visit. The dark pink, now this is girls only, the dark pink is primary, a visit to a primary medical home. It doesn't mean checkups, it just means any visit. So it's kind of good news, bad news, right? You know, 60 to 70% do have some kind of a visit, but 30 to 40% don't have any kind of visit. And here, if you add in boys, you can see that even fewer boys have at least one visit to some sort of ambulatory site or a primary care medical home. Who is most likely to lack visits? It's who you would expect: the poor, the minority, uninsured, and older adolescents. So we should think about that as we try to hone in on how we might need to want to vaccinate them. So lesson number 8, an ounce of prevention is often lacking. So many adolescents lack preventive visits, as was implied in the prior slide. But here's a nice summary by Karen Broder, which shows five different studies of the percent of adolescents who had a preventive checkup in 1 year, just at least one preventive visit in a year. And just look way over on the right-hand side. At a maximum, 60 to 70% for most of the studies of adolescents have a preventive visit in 1 year. So if you think about that, that's going to be a challenge to vaccinate in the medical home, particularly with some of these newer vaccinations. Lesson number 7, home sweet home. The medical home is a very sweet place, I think, but the medical home is also burdened with new vaccinations, and I'm going to give you just some examples. Now, if you think about it from the medical home's point of view, think about trying to vaccinate our population with HPV and influenza. So the first example is going to be HPV vaccine, and here's an example from Cindy Rand's study that shows the percent of 11 to 12-year-old girls who would need 0, 1, 2, or 3 additional visits just for HPV vaccination if we were going to give all 3 HPV vaccinations in 1 year if we took advantage of all visits to the medical home. So if the first HPV vaccination is given at a preventive visit, about 20% would need 2 extra visits and 70% would need 3 extra visits back to the medical home just for HPV because they don't come in. If, on the other hand, the first vaccine is given at any visit, we take advantage of every possible opportunity, then fewer adolescents would need to come in for additional visits. But still, it's a lot of extra visits back to the medical home. So this is HPV. What about universal influenza vaccination, given the new recommendations? This is a very simple slide that shows the percent of children 9 to 18 years of age. So all these kids would only need one vaccination, right? The percent of children 9 to 18 years of age who would need one extra visit, even if we had a 5-month window, and even if all well child care visits were used for vaccinations, or if all visits were used for vaccinations. So 60 to 90% of kids would need an extra visit. So if you think about it from our point of view, from the medical home's point of view, that's a ton of extra healthcare visits to try to take care of. So just for interest, I calculated the additional primary care visits needed for influenza vaccination of 11 to 18-year-olds in my urban pediatric practice in Rochester. So our practice, and there's several of us here, we take care of 4,800 teenagers. Those 4,800 teenagers make 6,000 visits in a year. And based on the prior slide, we would need to accommodate 1,400 more visits, even if we used a 5-month window, even if we took advantage of every single opportunity when those 4,800 adolescents already came in. That comes down to a 24% more visits for the entire year for our practice, just for flu vaccinations. So that's an enormous burden in a medical home. So most adolescents have a medical home, many of them use it, but there is already a burdened medical home if you think about adolescent vaccinations. Well, what about other healthcare settings used by adolescents? And I think the ultimate point here is going to be that they do use many other settings, and I'm going to go through a whole series of slides to show you what other settings they use. This slide shows, it's kind of what I showed before, the percentage of adolescent girls who have no ambulatory care visits within a 1-year period, okay? And it's by age, and this is so in red, so about 20% have no ambulatory visit. This in yellow is the percent who just go to the ED. So if you think about it, the ED is going to be an important site of care, but it's not a major site of care. At least a lot of kids who go to the ED also go to primary care. And each step up is going to show the added benefit, the added value. This is subspecialty visits. So although there's a lot of talk about going to subspecialists for vaccinations, not that many adolescents go only to subspecialists. It's in green, so you can hardly see it. Now this, in blue, is the percentage of adolescents who only go to school-based visits. And it's actually tiny currently. So there are more adolescents who do go to school-based health centers, but they also go back to primary care for their health care visits. So school-based health centers as a unique source of care is in blue. In OBGYN, this is the percent who go only to OBGYN, OBGYN and other sources of health care, and now here's primary care visits. So again, the big group is still the medical home, primary care visits, and here in this slide you can see the potential for the other sites of care in an adolescent vaccination strategy nationally. And if you actually look at boys, the picture is actually more somber because a greater percentage of boys, particularly older boys, don't get any care during the year. So there's going to be many potential sites of care. The medical home is still a big one. So let's hone into schools. So lesson number 5. Currently, actually relatively few adolescents receive health care at schools. And Ellie's going to talk about this much more, but I'm just going to give you a couple slides. This slide shows the number of school-based health centers, SBHC, school-based health centers in the United States between 1994 and 2002. There's been a pretty large rise in school-based health centers from about 450 to about almost 1,500 school-based health centers. So I did a little calculation about how many kids might be exposed to school-based health centers. So if we assume that the rise continues, and by 2008, we may have 3,000 school-based health centers across the United States. And if we take the data that about half are in middle schools or high schools, about 1,600 school-based health centers will be existing in schools that have adolescents in them. If we assume each school has about 1,000 adolescents, then about 1.6 million teenagers would be going to schools with school-based health centers, which is about 5% of all 11 to 18-year-olds across the United States. So school-based health centers are going to be a very important source of health care, but it's clearly currently, unless they continue to, unless we get a lot more school-based health centers, they're going to be a source of health care for only a proportion of teenagers. School-based health centers across the United States, they are increasing, but they're still very few, and they're available to actually only a small percentage of teens, but they are more likely to be in schools that have impoverished teenagers. In Rochester, for example, all the school-based health centers are in the inner city. So those are the kids who need vaccinations the most and who might be most behind. Another point, lesson number four, although most adolescents are in school, we have to remember that many drop out. And let me give you some kind of frightening data. This is graduation rates across the United States. You can pick the state that you're from and try to find out and look at it and see the graduation rates. So the implication from a public health point of view for vaccinations is they're going to, if we're looking for a lot of 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, in many cases they won't be there because they will have dropped out of school. And as we all know, high school completion rates vary depending on demographics, so that unfortunately, Hispanic and African American teenagers have a much, much, much lower high school completion rate than white teenagers. So on the left-hand side shows my state of New York. It's unbelievably sad, but less than half of Hispanic and black adolescents graduate from high school. We won't be able to vaccinate them if they're not there. Okay, lesson number three. Prototype examples do exist for school-based vaccinations, and we're going to hear a bit more about that today. I heard some great prototypes in Hawaii, Minnesota, Texas yesterday. Some challenges are going to be dissemination and sustainability to move from prototypes to actually doing this on a big, on a large-scale basis. Lesson number two, being in school does not equate to being able to receive vaccines because of the challenges of dissemination and sustainability. And I think it might be helpful to think about the NVAC quality standards to ensure quality of vaccination delivery, whether it's school or any other site. You need to have information and education for vaccine recipients, vaccine storage and handling, pre-vaccination screening, got to deal with contraindications and record keeping, vaccine administration and adverse events. So it's doable, it's just a challenge. So one question is, are schools ready? And you're going to hear more about that today. And finally, lesson number one, do no harm, but do good, and measure and evaluate what you do, because children or adolescents are our future. So just a quick summary of the top 10 lessons. Most adolescents have a usual source of care, but many do not use their medical home. Many teens lack preventive care. The medical home is critical, but the medical home is burdened with lots of vaccines. There are other sites of care, the ED, specialty, OBGYN, so far few in school, but that's going to be rising. Few adolescents currently use school-based health clinics, so we're going to really need to rethink things as we ramp that up. Although most teens are in school, many of them drop out. Some prototype school vaccination programs exist. Being in school does not equate to being able to receive vaccinations, and most importantly, follow key principles as we develop new strategies for adolescent vaccinations. We should never do harm, we should always do good, and we should always evaluate what we do. Some implications, the medical home is key. There's two possible school-based models, the school-based health centers, which you'll hear about today, and using schools as sites for vaccinations, particularly for influenza vaccination, which I think is very exciting. All models have advantages and challenges, and we do need studies to evaluate the new models and to think about transferring information as we start having multiple sites for adolescent vaccinations. So thank you very much.